KSCU Santa Clara presents Robots Attack. Movies, TV, video games, comic books, tech stuff, news, music. If it is geek, it's on Robots Attack. Participate in the show by commenting on Facebook, tweeting them at Robots Attack Me, emailing the show robotsattackshow@gmail.com. Now, Robots Attack.
That's right. Welcome to Robots Attack here on KSU Santa Clara, 103.3 FM, the underground sound. I am Joe, and with me is...
Caleb.
And...
Jason.
That's right. And you know what? If you're just tuning in for the first time, this won't be new to you because you've never heard our show before. But if you've had tune in the past, this is going to be different for you. Either way, you're...
in for a treat.
Exactly. We're going to do something a little different. We're going to change up the show slightly, and we want to hear your feedback on it. But we think it's going to be good.
Yeah. We're doing a format shift to do nothing but salsa music all through our show.
Correct.
That is a possibility, but I don't know if it's a very good, strong possibility, but we'll see. We shall
salsa
see.
Salsa as in chips and dip. That salsa, right?
Nom nom salsa.
We're going to discuss various salsas, review various salsas, go into the history of salsa.
Yes.
And no, we're not doing any of that.
Verde? Do we like it?
No, we're changing up the show, moving some things around, and we're getting rid of a couple things. But enough about all of that. Just stick around, tune in. You're going to have a good time. Normally, we start off the show with new releases. Mm. We're still going to do that, but not right at the beginning. Now, we're going to do some geek talk.
Woohoo!
And you know what, Caleb?
What's that?
Just so the audience can feel like they're a part of the show, especially during any of our segments, how exactly can they do that?
If you want to be a part of the show, and if you want to give us feedback about the show, please go to Facebook.com/robotsattackshow or go to twitter.com/robotsattackme. Those two portholes to communication are open right now on our laptops and stuff. And that's a good way to get a hold of us immediately. If you don't mind a slight delay, there's a ye old email at robotsattackshow@gmail.com.
That's right.
Which is still pretty fast.
It's
pretty
quick. It's still electronic.
Yeah.
All right. So let's do some geek talk. I'll start us off.
Okay.
Launch.
You know, maybe you haven't heard, but there was a little sort of teaser trailer that dropped.
I think I heard a little bit about this. Yeah, some waves on the internet.
Yeah, I think it
for SpongeBob, right?
Not exactly.
Oh, okay.
But I think it sort of tried to get ahead of perhaps some bad press because like shaky cam sort of footage of it dropped, and it was like, wait, we were planning on doing this on Monday, I think. But we don't want people to have that image of our trailer right now. So let's just put it out now.
Yeah.
If you don't know what I'm talking about the Batman versus Superman trailer.
Right.
So we've all had a chance to watch it.
Yes.
Like we all watched it together.
We might have.
Did we? Oh, yes. Yeah, we did. Okay, yeah.
The answer to that is yes.
So what do you guys think?
I'll save mine for last.
Oh, okay. It's like most teaser trailers; it doesn't give you much, but it was, and it's a lot of dramatic over voicing. I mean, as a dramatic dubbing, and it sounds like it. they're definitely sitting on more of a mood more than anything else, and the mood sort of near as I can tell, it's like they're trying to set the mood of the world of our world, if it was actually be addressing the problem of having a super being in their midst.
And whether that's a problem or
right,
not.
Yeah. Don't just automatically label it a problem. Jeesh, that's insensitive.
He's on Batman's side.
I said, or not. But, I don't know. I thought it was, some of the voiceover was a touch overdramatic, but at the same time, it's a teaser trailer. They're almost always a bit overdramatic, really.
Yeah.
That's true. It's sort of their game. Mm-hmm. What about you, Joe?
It's hard to tell because I think it's like, you know, it's a teaser. So it gives you, I mean, it's like what you said, Caleb. It's just sort of showing like that it looks like some people are kind of, I don't want to say like worshiping Superman, but they're, you know, like putting him on this pedestal of like, whoa, you know, like he's our savior kind of thing, you know, just from some of the imagery. But then you hear some of the voiceovers kind of contradicting that, and then it's showing Batman perhaps not really liking this sort of situation that Superman's being put in. And so I think it did a good enough job of at least giving you like a little idea and kind of tone of what the movie's going to be like.
It's a nice little vignette.
Yeah. Now, whether or not like that interests you, because for some people I've heard, they're like, you know, like, oh, it doesn't look like it's going to be any fun, or, you know, like the Marvel movies, blah, blah, blah. And I think that's fine. Like, I like that there's going to be a difference. So it's not just like the same, like, all right, it's another superhero movie with sort of the same tone. Like, I like that they're going to be different camps. Whether they can pull it off or not, that's another thing. But I like that there's going to be something different. So,
yeah. And they should, I feel like I'm with you. They should be different, because if they're all making the same movie, then there's no point in making different and separate movies. They could all just, you know, be reskinning the same game effectively.
Yeah.
That's true.
All right, Jason. You said you wanted to save for last.
Okay. Yeah. So far, my view of the what we've seen so far is that just seems way too dark for me and way too serious and way to everything. there's a lot of Batman scowling, which I know that's sort of Batman's thing, but it doesn't, I don't know if they did it on purpose, but they don't, and correct me if I'm wrong, they don't have Superman say anything through the entire thing, do they?
Yeah, I don't think he does.
It seems to be all I don't know who it is, like, talking at the very beginning, but the sort of summarization of how people feel about Batman, about Superman, whether he's, like, really great or not all that great, or maybe he should be feared, and then it goes straight into Batman being, like, really dour and taking the situation, like, really seriously. And it just seemed, it feels like, at any point during the entire thing, Superman could have just said, like, a few words and corrected the entire scheme of how things are going. But everything that you see, he's not saying anything. And so it makes me wonder, like, how they're going to kind of balance that. Because that's part of what I really liked about the last Superman movie is that he seemed very human, and he was, as racist as that may sound to all you aliens out there,
or speciesist,
right? He was really good at explaining the situation in a way that would make at least a normal person who can think things through, like, kind of understand where he's coming from and so on. And it just feels like there's been maybe 2 or 3 years of them putting a muzzle on Superman or something. It just seems weird for some reason.
I'd be curious to see, like, the time jump from Man of Steel to this one, like, how much time has passed.
Right. So yeah. And especially with him having a news reporter kind of in his pocket, you'd think he'd be able to kind of pilot or steer the conversation one way or another, at least a little bit, but yeah, it just feels like the movie so far, the way they're hatching it, it makes it sound like the biggest misunderstanding of all time.
Which, yeah, if you've read any of the crossover books that have happened over the years between those two, it's effectively what they do every single time.
Well, yeah. I mean, usually they have like a supervillain that took something and twisted it. And so maybe that's going to end up being what it is.
Yeah.
But
yeah, it makes me wonder if they're going to do like, because clearly this teaser is more like the perspective of
the humans,
Batman, and some of the people who aren't super happy that Superman's being placed on this pedestal. As far as like not so much the visuals, but the voiceovers and stuff. I mean, the visuals with Batman, he doesn't look happy with Superman.
Yeah,
but when does Batman look happy?
Yeah,
yeah.
But it makes me wonder if they're gonna do like another teaser, like flipped. You know, from like Superman's perspective, or like the people who are like happy that he's here.
Yeah.
And juxtapose, you know, like whose side, you know, like which side is the truth, like what, you know, kind of thing. But
I think that'd be pretty smart if they did that.
Actually, yeah, I hadn't really thought about that from like the other direction, is that there's been certain timelines or, you know, spots in the Batman myth that Batman hasn't been all that popular either. So maybe it kind of takes place in a little chunk of time like that, where Batman still feels like he has to protect the world and whatnot, and he views Superman as a menace. But maybe like an entire chunk of the population views Batman as a menace for one reason or another. And so that's why the two would kind of square off. And that could get interesting.
Yeah.
If it's explained that way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think my favorite summary of the trailer I read on Twitter, it was, it's all, "I'm sad, Batman. I'm sad too. We are sad. Let's fight." Okay.
Yeah.
It
did feel like at the very end, like Batman was kind of taunting Superman, like, "Come on, come on, get out the measuring tape."
Yeah. Because it was, because I remember like, sounded like Holly Hunter, and if I want to say like her character was supposed to be someone that wasn't really happy with Superman or something like that, and then the final voiceover is Jeremy Irons as Alfred. So it's a lot of like Batman's kind of side of things, or that sort of side. So like I said, it would be cool if they did a teaser that was the other side.
I really can't wait to see Jeremy Irons as Alfred. Yeah, I want to see what that looks like.
Yeah,
it's weird for my brain to wrap around right now, but if he has like a little pointy stash or something like that, I think it could like all bring it together perfectly. But
be good. Speaking of bringing things together perfectly.
Yes.
If you want to listen to KSU even when you're not near a radio, you can stream us whenever you want at KSU.org or on the TuneIn radio app or website, and never be without the underground sound. And there's a pro tip, of course.
If you want to find our station faster, search for KSCU. That is unique to our station. That is the fast way to find us. If you wish to be exploratory and see what the world has to offer, you can search for 103.3 FM. You'll find all sorts of interesting stuff that comes up. But if you want to find us, that's KSCU.
Yeah. If you want to be like The Flash instead of Lara Croft.
Yeah, there you go.
I'm trying to make it more.
There you go.
All right. Anyone else got something they want to talk about?
Yeah, I invested a little bit of money in a little game that is a lot of gory called Mortal Kombat X.
Oh, I should have had the music right.
Yeah.
Mortal Kombat.
Anyways.
Also. No, that was actually quite good. I can never remember it that well. But yeah, it's amazing to me. I've never been a really big fan of the series, but for some reason right now it's really clicking with me. I don't know if it's because I'm like a very visual person, and this game like really hits the visuals out of the park.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
they did a good job with that. So it makes me want to suffer through a completely different fighting system a little bit more, just to to get to all of the meaty goodness of the rending powers of the new processors out there and whatnot.
Yeah. Yeah, and it just does like a lot of cool like little things that you never really think of until like you have something that has more power to it. Just the fact of like you're playing a fighting game and someone wins a round, and then it usually has to kind of fade out and then restart. This, no fade out. It's just the character gets back up. There's kind of some taunting, and it's just all this fluid motion. And then
it's really clean.
Just the things going on in the background. There's like no real stop to it. Everything is just flows really nice, and it looks really nice. And it's like, it's not like the craziest things in the world, but they're just nice stuff that you're like, wow, I don't think I could go back.
It's
hard to go back to.
Yeah, like I'm a pretty big Tekken fan at this point. So I think I've bought practically every Tekken thing over the last 3 or 4 incarnations at least. And that the graphics used to be a big part of what I loved about that game. And I mean, granted, DOA outdoes Tekken in the graphics department, but
yeah.
I also feel a little bit dirty after playing DOA. I have to admit, I know I should be more comfortable with me, but I feel awkward. And so, Tekken was my big game for a long time, but the stuff that I've seen that's previewing Tekken 7 compared to the stuff that I'm seeing right now in Mortal Kombat, it's actually kind of disappointing on the Tekken end. And so I'm hoping this is like a wake-up call to a lot of the future fighting games that they need to be thinking more about what's going on around and how to incorporate that into the actual fighting and so on.
Yeah.
Yeah, the one thing that's definitely a little bit different about the two is like Mortal Kombat's still very distinctly the left-right style of
it's a game. Two-dimensional fighter.
Whereas Tekken's big thing has always been that it's got 3D arenas.
Yeah.
And
that's been the big
Tekken
thing for a lot
DOA.
Of them lately. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they were like kind of pioneered, like, yeah, we actually have a free-roaming space, relatively speaking, even though a lot of it's still like a 2D action plane for a lot of the stuff. Mm. But
yeah.
Still, it'll be interesting to see where each one like tries to differentiate themselves as the processing power has exponentially increased from the last versions of most of these games.
Yeah,
which makes me want to really curious what's going to happen to Soul Calibur, because I don't know if they're going to bring it back for another version. I don't know if 5 sold quite well enough, but I would like to see Soul Cal on a next gen or current. I'd like to see it on a 1 or a PS4. I think that would be pretty rad.
I think they're probably going to bring it back, but the question is which direction they're going to go from here. Because, I mean, a lot of people viewed that they kind of cheapened the last one by adding the sort of stripper mechanic to it of having armor break and stuff like that. I mean, it was kind of cool and it made some sense, but when it came down to it, a lot of it was just an excuse to show girls in their underwear. So,
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see where they take it next. But just Soul Cal has always been a kind of a high watermark for a lot of the 3D fighters, and I'd like to see where they take the new technologies, see what they do with it.
It's still the only like real genuine weapons based game out there. All of the rest of them maybe have somebody like pull out a weapon here and there, but for the most part it's supposed to be actual hand-to-hand combat.
Yeah,
like Mortal Kombat you can use weapons and stuff, but
and like I don't know if it was the previous one or the one before the previous one, but Mortal Kombat did sort of a Soul Cal version where it was all concentrating on weapons.
And
they had different weapon styles. But I don't know if that did very well for them, considering that this one turned out really well and it doesn't have any of that stuff. So,
do you have a favorite fighter before we move on?
I hate to say it because I'm not sure. Since I'm so into like the looks of characters, so far I like the way Devorah plays about the best. I really enjoy pulling off the different weird little combos that she can do with the odd little spider arms that branch out of no place that she has. But I'm not a big fan of her as a looker. So
she is a little off-putting in terms of appearance.
Yeah. Always pulling slugs out of her stomach and so on.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong. She works out. That much shows. But other than that, yeah.
Caleb?
Oh,
do you have a fighter? The favorite fighter?
Oh, favorite fighter? It's been so long since I've really played Mortal Kombat.
Well, I mean, but from 10, from what we all played together.
I played, I think I was having pretty good success with Liu Kang. It's like all of, it's like some of them, like you find that rhythm of that keeps the other person just off, and I'm like, yes, come on, keep going. Breaker, no.
Yeah, and that was the biggest thing for me to get used to on that game too, is that it has so much different of a rhythm than all of the other fighting games. There's a lot more stunning that happens in that one, so there's a lot more patience that you have to kind of sit through if somebody knows how to string together a really good set of stuns.
Joe's pointing at me, and I wish I knew how to do the sun moves correctly. It's sort of a, hey, that was kind of cool. I'll keep doing that one.
Yeah. Too much of Jason's chagrin.
Right, yeah. I might have told him that I hated him multiple times the other day when we were playing. I didn't mean it, like, 100%.
Sad, but, you know.
Which you usually follow with, you do realize that every single move you've been doing for like the last minute and a half has been stun moves.
Yeah.
Actually, not really, but...
Yeah, he has a definite knack for stumbling onto nothing but a string of stun moves. Yeah.
So, which is to say this game is both experienced and newbie friendly, so it's got that going for
true.
It.
Yeah. Yeah, that's all... good fighters, I think, should be friendly to everyone, but still be good for people who want to
dive deep.
Yeah.
Did you have a favorite from your play?
My favorite female character is Cassie Cage. Mm-hmm. Favorite male
She's
character
pretty cool.
is Aaron Black.
Mm-hmm.
The gunslinger guy with the pistols.
Yeah.
His eyes creep me out. I can't play him. His eyes like burrow into me.
He's looking into your soul.
You guys planned that, didn't you?
Yes, we did. Maybe.
So, let's see.
What you got? What you got? What you want to throw on us?
I'm going to throw down the other teaser trailer that dropped that is currently sitting at 40 million views on YouTube right now.
Wow, okay. Paul Blart, Mall Cop 3?
Mm-hmm. Oh,
jeez. Wow.
Yeah, if you spell Paul Blart Mall Cop 3 as Star Wars The Force Awakens, then yes, you are correct.
Oh, okay.
My mistake.
Mm-hmm. So yeah,
that's a few views.
Just a few.
A wee bit there.
I think I watched it 3 times. How many times have the rest of you?
Yeah, maybe.
So 14.
Yeah.
Probably not that much, okay. but yeah, more.
I think I've surpassed one hand's worth of viewings.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, probably. Because I watched like first couple times like on my phone. Then when I got home, I was like, okay, I need to see this on the computer. And I saw it on TV. Like just kind of saw it on different platforms.
Yeah. Experience seeing it on the big screen was like, ooh, that's kind of nice.
Yeah. Catch things, maybe a mist or something. You know, really quick. Like, oh, wait. Oh, I think that's.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So yeah. Needless to say. Despite the fact that it did not show up on my top 10, my ticket has already been sold because they announced it was existing. So, but yeah, it looks like a lot of fun. It looks like it's going to capture the things we liked in terms of tone from the original trilogy, the first release trilogy. But still taking it into a direction that is new, and the opening shot of the teaser trailer, I think, sums it up quite nicely.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. I'll give it that.
For those who maybe haven't watched it,
just what happens?
Yeah, real quick summary.
So, real summary is you see a speeder on Tatooine. Like, oh, cool, speeder Tatooine. That's very much.
Does it have the classic music? Isn't dun dun.
I can't remember for sure.
And okay, just to clarify, that's not Tatooine.
Right.
No, just so you know. Look,
new Tatooine.
Just so the audience, like if someone out there is like, that's not Tatooine.
New Tatooineavania.
It's Jakku, I think is the name of it.
Yeah. Okay.
It's a speeder.
Yeah, get it right. Jeez.
Speeder and desert
person
just,
who
I'm
hasn't read any of the additional
like,
stuff.
They call themselves geeks. That was Tatooine.
Right.
Just
a lot of people
that.
Assumed it was Tatooine at the beginning before they did other announcements.
Yeah. So speeder on desert planet, it looks familiar, feels familiar, and then
very Tatooine-ish.
As you move across the horizon line, all of a sudden the mountains change, and you realize that you're staring at the crashed hulk of a Star Destroyer, and you're just like, "What?"
I was like, X-wing.
Yeah,
and then
a little bit farther forward. Yeah.
Yeah, in the background you see the background begins to expand, and you see the scope of things change. You're just kind of like, "Whoa!" It's like. To me, it said, it is what you know, but it's not in the way that you know it. And I couldn't help but be exceedingly excited by all this. I'm like,
Yeah, it does, by showing that, it sort of gives that kind of lived-in look that, you know, A New Hope and Return through those had, whereas, like, maybe in the others, the prequels, something would have come along and, like, pick that up and taken it away, but like in this sort of time frame, like it's just left, and I'm sure some people probably even live in it and scavenge it.
That's a good point. People should have known, like from the very beginning, that it wasn't Tatooine, because Jawas would have pulled that thing apart in like a day and a half.
That's true.
It would have been all over it like ants.
Oh, GD!
Oh, right.
Maybe they all just died of excitement.
Like, right.
Flops.
So the entire thing would be aglow in little yellow eyes.
Yeah.
That would be. There's going to be like fan pictures of that at some point, I'm sure.
Yeah. But and then there's, of course, you know, all the speculation of who's the bad guy or girl behind the mask.
Who's the villain?
Who's the chrome trooper? And, you know.
Yeah.
What role does Finn play and Rey play, and
which one has the power of the Force within them, and so on and so forth.
Yeah, I keep seeing like major sort of geek outlets do the same story, like who is this, who is that, like on down the list of all of the characters, and it's like, you don't know. Just shut up. But it is fun to speculate a little bit.
Yeah.
And the fact that's why I think the main bad guy is Jar Jar Binks. Yeah, because, I mean, we never see Jar Jar Binks's end, do we? Or is there an extended universe comic that is now in non-existence?
It's possible. Maybe Jar Jar and Max von Sydow team up together. Because
that's too much for me.
You know. Yeah, there's a lot of people that I haven't been accounted for yet.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, because that's one thing I did, too, after seeing the teaser, was go back and look at the cast list again. Like, kind of forgetting, like, I thought I was rumored that person was in it. Going like, yeah, they're in it. Wow. I wonder who these people are going to play, because they haven't shown.
Especially Sydow, it'll be really interesting since, it seems like this sort of thing. He usually plays a very iconic, evil type of character, but...
Yeah.
But we'll see. Maybe he's just some governor or something like that.
It's possible.
Just to throw people off.
Yeah, just to throw everybody off. Oh, you thought I was the next emperor, blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm. Right. The big bad guy is really two Ewoks standing, like one standing on another one's shoulders.
In a trench coat.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, I'd heard, too, that, like, the Empire is no longer called the Empire, and like the Rebellion is no longer called the Rebellion. There's like there are different names to them, and
it depends on what you've read, because it sounds like even the official Star Wars release stuff has had kind of different nomenclature for a lot of this stuff. So I can't remember all of it right now.
It also sounds like classic Abrams misdirection as well.
Maybe
it's possible,
but
this
the
isn't
one thing.
Con. It's not Khan. We're not going to tell you it's Khan. No, it's not Khan.
That's true.
That's Khan. Oh, it's not Khan.
It's totally Khan.
That's totally Khan. No, it's not. It's this other. It's not Khan. I'm Khan. we knew it.
You just
Maybe this one. This time it looks like they might be a little bit more subtle. Who knows?
Yeah, hopefully.
Plus, that's, I mean, since they're not like.
Yeah, it's not drawing from existing, like.
Yeah, there's not. There's no existing canon for where they're going, other than what's happened before. So.
Other than the stuff that they've said that they're not using anymore.
Yeah.
But yeah, the big Star Wars event that they had over the weekend.
Star Wars Celebration.
Right. Woo! It spawned all sorts of information about everything. Mm-hmm. And where the Jakku thing comes from is actually from the Battlefront game, their section for all of that stuff. The DLC that you get for pre-ordering that is that battle where you get to crash that Star Destroyer, effectively. That's, and it's supposed to be like the turning point where it's like the end of the Empire as we know it was that battle. Because it's like, sure, they took out the Death Star and all of the like leadership and all of that stuff, but there's still like a giant military out there.
Yeah.
And Jakku is supposed to be like that final battle.
Cool.
That's cool. Speaking of other cool things, are you an animal lover who wants to help homeless animals find their forever homes but have limited time to volunteer? Join San Jose Animal Advocates, a local nonprofit, is building a community network to help find loving foster and forever homes for pets in our local shelters. With your help, we can save countless animals. All it takes is a few clicks, and you can share their stories with your network of friends. It's easy. Join them at sjanimaladvocates.org or look for them on Facebook. Now, Jason.
Yes.
If I remember correctly, you had sort of a controversial take on this teaser trailer.
I don't know how controversial it is, but...
I'm just throwing it out there to make listeners on the edge of their
seat.
No,
me personally, the first teaser trailer resonated more for me. Like, and I realize a lot of it is just because I don't have as much sentimentality as a lot of people. So I thought it was really cool seeing the Crash Star Destroyer at the beginning. It was definitely a standout thing. And I thought it was really cool having Han and Chewie at the end of the entire thing.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't feel like it gave me that much more of the stuff that I usually am a lot more passionate about, which is, like, this is what the design of the world looks like, and this is how the technology has evolved, and stuff like that.
Right.
But I felt like the previous trailer did a much better job on that. I kind of said, like, well, this is the way that droids are kind of being built now. And
which I thought one of the cooler moments on from the stream of the Star Wars Celebration, when you see DD-8 roll onto
BB-8, like a BB.
I thought it was DD.
I'm pretty sure it's BB.
Yeah.
Google it, or Bing it, or Yahoo it, or
search
whatever
it.
Search engine of your preference. We don't discriminate here on Robots Attack.
But yeah, I just felt like it contributed more to what the new look and feel of the universe was than this one did. But this one gave more of a feeling of what the characters are like.
Yeah.
So that was kind of cool. And it is really cool seeing Harrison Ford as, like, Han Solo again.
Yeah.
but yeah, I think I told you guys, like, until I find out exactly what he meant by "we're home," it doesn't really hit home as well for me.
Oh.
It's just another big question mark. So I don't know if it's going to end up being, like, some big spoiler or what, but... I have my ideas on what they mean by it. What about all of you out there in Radio Land?
That's true. Caleb, how could they give their...
If you have your input and you have your thoughts on the matter, you can hit us up on facebook.com/robotsattackshow or go over to twitter.com/robotsattackme. Those are both open right now. We are checking them. If you hit us up there, we will hear about it nearly instantly.
Yes.
And if you'd like to digest these thoughts a little bit more and send out something slightly longer form, you can always do robotsattackshow@gmail.com.
That's right.
Yeah. And I did misspeak. It is BB-8.
We knew, but we were more trying to prove to you that you were wrong.
Well, that goes without saying.
No, but yeah, I know what you're talking about from that little snippet. It is really cool seeing an actual physical thing roll out instead of like a Lucas creation where they would have had to do like a Tupac hologram of a ball rolling. That would have been kind of exciting, but not as cool.
Yeah.
I would have shed a small tear for that. Just going, no, don't do that.
Right.
But it's like seeing like the two radio controlled droids roll on stage. It's like, that's just very cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. It'll be fun to see them interacting in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Plays out.
Very cool.
Yeah. There's going to have to be like a repair off or something like that at some point in that movie.
Yeah. I'd be curious to see what BB-8's like. Kind of roll like
right,
it sort of. I didn't actually mean that pun, but I mean yes, I did totally.
Yeah, will it be an astromech or will it be some other type of droid? Only the future, only time will tell. I say
this Christmas.
Yeah, tune in this Christmas.
Yeah, and do we actually even know like who it belongs to or anything like that?
I don't remember.
I don't know if it belongs to Rey or...
They kind of imply that it might, since it's usually in kind of scenes where she has just been shown, but there's none with her, like, standing next to it or anything like that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We'll find out.
Yeah.
Mysteries abound.
Yeah. It actually belongs to the McFlan Side Out.
What?
Oh!
Or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And oh, man. What's his name's inside BB-8? That'll be the real surprise. Andy Serkis. Because he's in the movie, too.
That It makes a lot more sense now.
Because they got Marvel. Okay, Disney has Marvel now, so they got that Ant-Man technology. So they just had the ability to shrink Andy Serkis down, fit him inside the ball part.
Well, we were joking around like how they got around like not having a person in it before was this is a much better, more creative idea having Andy Serkis in it. But we were joking around before that it was trained hamsters that they had.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
That's also how BB-8 like repairs things is that it just shovels specially trained hamsters. Onto. Mm-hmm. Space hamsters.
Space hamsters, yeah.
With makes zero sense. Gravity, like, qualifications. Because you don't want to just, like, shovel a bunch of hamsters into space. And, like, have them being awkwardly floating, like, off into the distance. That would be mean.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't want that. You want specially trained space hamsters.
Mm-hmm.
With magnetic boots.
And cute little space suits and stuff.
Right.
I agree. I think I'm down with that. I'm sure.
Yeah.
I'm sure the audience out there is.
As long as they're not CG, as long as they're actually trained,
oh,
I think.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think then it's cool. Because people are tired of the CG.
The CG hamsters, yeah.
Mm. Anything else you want to hit, Joe? Or
I think that's good.
Right. Okay.
I think we've thrown a layer of geek onto the audience that they can snuggle up with.
Right.
A blanket of geek.
Yeah, and the audience can tell us whether they prefer hamsters or guinea pigs.
Ooh, there you go.
So. Mm.
But both have to be space?
Well, yeah, they have to be specially trained.
That's true.
Right.
All right, now I'm going to throw this out.
Mm. Okay.
Do you want to hit up new releases right now, or do you want to take a music break?
Let's get musical.
Yeah, let's do a quick music break and come back with new releases.
The other robots have spoken. You will take a music break and then we'll come back with some new releases. All right. You're listening to Robots Attack here on KCU Santa Clara, 103.3 FM, the underground sound.
You're listening to Robots Attack. Follow them on Twitter at Robots Attack Me. Email them at robotsattackshow@gmail.com. Like them on Facebook. And check out the website at robotsattack.me.
Alrighty, welcome back to Robots Attack here on KSU Santa Clara. Let's get into some new releases. All right, coming in the theater this week, we have Revolution. Continuing his adventurous journey around the world, filmmaker Rob Stewart brings us Revolution, a full-length feature film that is inspiring humans to change the world and save our planet. Along with world-renowned experts, he learns that past evolutions can help solve some of our current and future environmental problems. Next, we have The Age of Adeline. A young woman born at the turn of 20th century is rendered ageless after an accident. After years of a solitary life, she meets a man who might be worth losing her immortality. Ooh. Then we have Little Boy. A 7-year-old boy is willing to do whatever it takes to bring his father back from World War II. And finally, we have Adult Beginners. A young hipster entrepreneur crashes and burns on the eve of his company's big launch. With his entire life in disarray, he leaves Manhattan to move in with his estranged pregnant sister, brother-in-law, and 3-year-old nephew in the suburbs, only to become their Manny. Faced with real responsibility, he may finally have to grow up, but not without some bad behavior first.
Alrighty, well, if those aren't thrilling you, maybe you're something that you want us to have on the Blu-ray or the DVD, perhaps.
Well, what if those do thrill them, but they also want to do that?
This is also a possibility. If those sound good, and you're also curious about what's showing up in your Redbox,
I'm just teasing you for saying that. So.
you might be able to find Taken 3 on Blu-ray and DVD.
Oh, I don't take that.
A certain set of skills will apparently take you pretty far. And this time it takes Brian Mills into the center of the organization that killed his wife.
Spoilers. I haven't seen Taken 2 yet. Oh, man.
Oh, boy. Then there's Like Sunday, Like Rain on DVD. A young musical prodigy's life is full of many things, except someone to care for or to be cared for by. A 20-something struggling musician is also wondering where her place in the world is. And by plot, I mean her happenstance, these two come together and find themselves the better for it.
I see what you did there.
Yeah. There is Everly on Blu-ray and DVD. Selma Hayek throws down against mobsters and assassins. What more do you need to know? Then there's Cake on Blu-ray and DVD. Claire suffers. She has scars that go far beyond the skin. Dealing with the constant pain has pushed her to drive away those she cares most about. But the suicide of one of her peers pushes her to understand the premature death, and it may also lead to her own redemption.
Wow, things got really serious. Yeah. There.
I was
wondering about that tone shift in your voice. And it's like, oh, okay.
Yeah. We're about to crack some whys, and then all of a sudden, oh, maybe I won't.
Yeah. Meanwhile, in video games,
awkward,
and also hard hitting on the drama side of things, Slow Down Bull is coming out on April 20th.
You don't tell a bull to slow down.
No, well, this one you do for his own good, because here, get this.
All right.
Control the artistic bull, Esteban. Help him find elements to create his works while restraining his impulses to run wild, possibly damaging his own beautiful art pieces.
Huh.
Now, if that's not an interesting idea for a video game, I don't know what it is.
Self-control, the video game.
Right. See? Deep.
It's
got deep drama.
Indie all over it.
If you haven't heard of a little game called Shovel Knight, it is visiting itself upon the PlayStation ecosystem tomorrow. Dig through floors and walls to defeat the Enchantress and find lost love with your handy dandy shovel blade.
Shovel.
Yes. He shovels well.
Does he only do it at night?
I don't. I think he's a
full-time shoveler.
Full-time shoveler.
Okay, so it's like a knight with a K.
I was trying to think.
Yes, with a K.
What is the term for like an animal that functions both at day and night? Is there a term? I thought there was a term.
There might be, but I'm not sure what it is.
Okay. In other news, Watch Quest is being released on April 24th.
Not related.
If you're
to
wondering what Watch Quest is, it's the first and amazing adventure to find its way onto your Apple fiending wrist. For the Apple. The iWatch or is the Xbox? Okay, the Apple Watch.
Yes.
Why not iWatch? What happened there?
I don't know.
They haven't
been doing i for other than iPhone for a little while now.
They were like, oh well, iZombie did it, and now it's officially dead.
Well, like Apple Pay and Apple Watch, MacBook.
Anyway, you can outfit your hero in Watch Quest with your other Apple device, your Apple iPhone, and then go for hours of adventuring with nothing but your wrist and an Apple device.
Does it work on your iPad?
I don't know.
I see.
It sounds like the actual adventuring all happens on your wrist, but all of the other devices are for messing around with your kit and so on, so you can change your character around. But I don't have any of these expensive devices, so.
Yeah, it will probably, the app will mostly reside on the on an auxiliary device because the watch doesn't have any native apps yet.
And this makes it sound like it's a native app specifically for it. But, hey, whatever. Anyway, other than that, we have a little game called Kolot. I have no idea if I'm pronouncing that right. It's spelled Kholat. It's being released on April 24th. It does sound pretty interesting, though. Follow up on the real-life mystery of the Dyatov Pass incident as Russian students. I'm not familiar with the incident, but it is apparently like a real thing where a bunch of people just disappeared oddly someplace in Russia. So it sounds like it's kind of the love child of the Blair Witch Project and Darkest Dungeon because it functions almost completely off of a unique fear effect system. So it sounds pretty interesting to me.
It does sound kind of cool.
Is it supposed to be like that? Is it Chromatoa? What was that? Like something happened in history where like an entire like village just vanished.
Oh, Roanoke is one in the States.
Was that the
one?
Okay, is that?
Yeah, that was.
I don't think it's as large as that. But
okay,
that's just what I got off of the original story. So I don't know. I'm gonna have to actually research it now. I'm gonna do that right now. Oh, wow. While somebody
and that's on the PC.
Yes, that's for Mac and PC.
Oh, and then our Canadian listener and friend Kane would be mad if I didn't mention that the second DLC for The Evil Within drops on Tuesday.
Oh, okay.
It's like the second part of the first DLC.
Yeah, it's weird. For weeks, I've been getting nothing but DLC messages on all of the game stuff and no actual games. And then this week, I get nothing about DLC and actual games. Anyway.
So from gaming to comic books, because it's time to talk about comic books.
yes, it is.
Wait.
Bam.
Before you get to comics, which can be very therapeutic.
Yes.
There's a PSA about the art of therapeutic self-massage. Practice the art of therapeutic self-massage for health and wellness with instructor Luis Jackson on Saturday, April 25th from 1 to 3:45. I'm assuming that's p.m. at Samyama Yoga Center. Samyama is located at 2995 Middlefield Road, Palo Alto. For ticket pricing and more information, visit samyamayogacenter.com.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Let's see. So from DC, it's Convergence Justice League America number one. As the multiverse continues to fold back on the core DCU, more is being seen from the Crisis on Infinite Earths heroes. In this issue, Elongated Man leads the Detroit Justice League against a threat from the Tangent Universe.
So, wait, isn't Elongated Man like
Mr. Fantastic and Plastic Man, but his name is
Elongated
Man.
But he's not Plastic Man.
He's not Plastic Man, and he's not Mr. Fantastic. He's the Elongated Man.
He's okay, so he's just less fantastic?
Oh. Yep. Speaking of Mr. Fantastic, did you see that new Fantastic Four trailer?
Yes, I did. It was pretty cool, I thought.
Yeah, but did you
I haven't seen the newest one.
It dropped kind of after we hung out, I think, like the next day or something like that.
Yeah, I'm a little bit torn on Doctor Doom, but all the rest of them look really cool. So,
yeah, they're kind of playing up the interdimensional travel or something.
Yeah,
instead of space,
which makes a lot of sense because heck, DC has been messing with interdimensional stuff forever. So.
And also the more recent versions of the Fantastic Four comics were dealing a lot more with transdimensional travel.
Oh, okay.
That's kind of where they were taking it for a while. So it makes sense that they might be kind of bridging back from that into the movies. So,
okay.
Cool.
There you go. Speaking of Marvel properties, Star Wars number 4. Luke is drawn back to Obi-Wan's home on Tatooine as he comes to grips with the idea of becoming a Jedi. Then at Dark Horse, Frankenstein Underground, number 2. The creature has been chased off the surface of the Earth, but deep within the bowels of the world, a different beast will hunt the creature. It's written by Mike Mignola, so that should be kind of cool. Then
what else has he done?
He also did Hellboy. Okay. That's his most well-known work.
I was asking for the audience, just, you know.
Mm-hmm. From Image, a new title called Captara.
Hmm.
Keith Kang, Kanga, and crew crash on the strange and dangerous world of Captara. And if they don't survive, neither does Earth.
Whoa, that's pretty deep right there. That's a lot of pressure.
No,
this person.
No pressure or nothing. Just you and your crew got to survive. Fate of the world depends on it. Yeah.
What?
On a slightly lighter note, from IDW, it's Uncle Scrooge, number 1.
Nice.
The richest duck in the world must defend his fortune against the mechanized menace Giga Beagle.
Giga Beagle.
Giant mechanized beagle boy.
Wow, that's beautiful.
Oh, yeah, because it was like the Beagle Brothers. Was it?
Yeah, the Beagle nemesis. Boys were the thieves that were always trying to steal his stuff.
Oh, man.
They're always after me gold.
Weren't they going to do new DuckTales?
New DuckTales series is coming next year.
Next year?
Yeah.
On Netflix, right? Or one of the streaming services, wasn't it? Or was it
Disney? They didn't. Disney is producing it. Disney is, I think, going to release it. I don't know if they're doing it direct to streaming or if they're going to try and bolster up their streaming service, their own streaming services.
Or their channel, their.
Yeah.
Disney XD or something. Okay.
I have information on the Dyatlov Pass incident if we are interested.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. It happened in 1959 in the Ural Mountains. It's named after the leader of a skiing group. Basically, skiers all seem to flee. This is people investigating afterward. The skiers seem to flee the campsite that they were at, some of them barefoot in various states of dress. Two of the victims had fractured skulls and broken ribs, but there were no contusions whatsoever. So effectively, it just happened. So,
wow.
Yeah. Soviet authorities determined an unknown compelling force had caused the deaths. Access to the region was blocked for 3 years after the incident.
You know,
we
did just rewatch The Crystal Skull, and they were big on the mind powers.
That is true.
Psychic Russians, they were working on that.
So, yeah.
That's part of it.
There's that.
Perhaps. Well, that was highly informative. Thank you.
Yeah, it was moderately informative. I feel like I should have had more information than just that. But, hey, what can you do with the power of the internet?
It's rough.
Mm-hmm. That rounds out the comic selection.
All right. Then I will round us out with some new releases in music. All right. We've got a new album from Passion Pit called Kindred. It's the third full-length release for the indie pop band led by Michael Angelakos. Was co-produced with Chris Zane, Alex Aldi, and Ben Blanco. There's a new album from Death called New. It's N.E.W. It's Detroit garage / hard rock band's remaining members of Bobby Hackney, Dennis Hackney, and Bobby Duncan. Recorded songs written by the late David Hackney, as well as new songs for its first new recording since 1976. A new album from San Furman called Jackrabbit. It's the second full-length release for the Brooklyn chamber pop band led by Elise Ludwig Leone. Features vocals from Alan Tate and Charlene Kay. We've got a new album from Alabama Shakes called Sound and Color. It's the second full-length release for the Southern Rock band. It was produced by Blake Mills. And we have a self-titled album from Wire. This is the 14th studio release for the British post-punk band led by Colin Newman. All right. Those are just a sampling of some new releases for this week. Obviously, more stuff comes out, but
we can't possibly do them all.
We can't.
You can't expect that from us.
I know. That's a lot from us to do. Mm-hmm.
Why do you expect so much, people out there?
I don't know.
It's crazy.
Adjust your expectations.
Exactly. All right, so that's some new releases. You think we should jump into the news now?
Yes.
All righty.
News.
All right. Who's got our first story for the audience?
Okay, I do.
All righty.
So the big question posed by myself is, what the heck is happening in the Borderlands? There's been a bunch of news lately where it's starting to sound like Borderlands is kind of falling apart in a weird sort of way. They
say
lost
it isn't so.
Yeah, I don't think it's really going to happen outright, but there's been a series of kind of difficult / bad news in the last little while. About a month ago, Anthony Birch, the lead writer for the previous the Borderlands pre-sequel and Borderlands 2, ended up leaving for greener pastures. 2K Australia, the studio responsible for the Borderlands pre-sequel, was just completely shut down this last week. Just closed the doors, bam.
Wow.
Entire studio gone. And this is a studio that has literally done nothing but award-winning stuff for, like, the last three or four games that they've done. But they are more credited as, like, sort of a helper studio than their own sort of gig. So maybe that was kind of the nail in the coffin for them. But it sounds to me like the pre-sequel is doing relatively well. So I'm kind of surprised, especially since the quality of it seems pretty good, other than some pretty decent complaints about its setting, since the moon can only have so much variation to it. But that's not really on them. They didn't create the story of it as much either. But yeah, the newest thing is that the original creator of the story, effectively, the director of the first game and the lead writer for the first game, ended up moving off to greener pastures as well.
Okay.
As I was saying all that, I did not have my story ready, so now I'm going to be able to actually say his name in a second here.
Do you know how involved he was in the second Borderlands? Or
basically,
more...
it sounds like he's... It's arguable because he's been credited as, I'll see it, put this exactly how the story put it.
Matthew Armstrong, I believe, is the gentleman in which you're speaking.
Yes, Matthew Armstrong. Basically, he ended up announcing it over Twitter like everybody does these days. Basically, he said, things changed, period. No longer working at Gearbox Software. We'll always love Gearbox, but it's Adventure Time. I don't know if he's working directly for Adventure Time now. Yeah, here's hoping. I don't know. I thought there was more on this.
Yeah, it seems like there's starting to be more and more creators jumping from kind of big companies to do indie stuff or...
Yeah, and yeah. He did clarify, basically he said that now that the pre-sequel has kind of officially been a success and they put out the first big DLC, the Claptastic Voyage, everything shipped that was on his roster, that he was taking the rare moment to sit back and reevaluate and decide to move on to something different. But I don't know, that tweet, things changed. That's something that you say after something went wrong, you know?
Yeah.
But I was trying to find... basically, to answer your question, I can't find the specific details for it at the moment, but it sounds like he wasn't actually part of the development team, but he is listed as one of the main, as one of the people who is the Borderlands team at the beginning.
Okay.
So I think it's like it gives credits, and at the very beginning of the credits, it says something to the effect of Borderlands is or something like that. Gearbox is. And so he was always in like the top three names on that. After Borderlands 1. But still, I mean, with him being the lead writer for the first game, he kind of set the tone for a lot of the stuff.
Yeah.
Right.
That and Birch ended up kind of picking up and running with.
Since it has characters from the first one in the second one.
Exactly. And Anthony Birch was pretty clear that kind of the biggest, most interesting characters from that first game are what gave him the ideas that spun him the direction that he went with all of the Borderlands 2 stuff. Mm-hmm. So anyway, it's just interesting to me that all of the creative people behind effectively Borderlands series up to this point have kind of fled or been kicked out of the business, sort of. So.
Yeah, I think there was a... one of the head guys on Battlefield Hardline at EA left after I saw that little news thing a while back. Left after Hardline was dropped, came out. So,
and who knows, maybe this is all like completely normal stuff, but every once in a while you hear this news from the gaming industry and it really feels like the sky is falling type of stuff.
Yeah.
Just because there's a lot of activity, but hey, maybe it's all completely normal.
Yeah, on the other side, it is potentially promising because it means that the world of gaming is broad enough that you can have big creative people move on to other projects and create more good games beyond like what some of the studios can do. As indie games have started to rise in prominence and rise in popularity and the revenue that they can bring in, it's like it'll be interesting to see if some of the distribution of popular gaming begins to not rest solely on the quote-unquote AAA title holders.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, the most painful thing to me about the Anthony Birch news especially was that he wasn't moving on to another gaming gig. He was moving on to, like, a
TV show.
Effectively a TV show. Like, the reality show version of a computer... of a internet-based TV show. So, yeah. But I don't even know what that means. I don't know what he's going to be writing, but it'll be interesting to find out.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, speaking of the web, if you want to listen to KCU even when you're not near a radio, you can stream us whenever you want at kcu.org or on the TuneIn Radio app or website and never be without the underground sound. And, of course, our pro tip...
do a search for KSCU. That will take you straight to our station. If you want to be adventurous, do a search for 103.3 FM. But that is not unique to our station on the globe, but KSCU is. All right. I also have our the next story.
Also about Borderlands?
No, but it is about things that are large and kind of exciting. This past weekend was Big WoW Comic Fest, which is very cool. And that, and you know, good on them.
And it's big.
And it is big. And there used to be another big comic event that was part of the more mainline titles. I mean, there's still Ape, which is the Alternative Press Expo, which is very cool, but it's not like DC and Marvel don't normally show up to that one.
Mm.
So there used to be another big con up here that was called WonderCon.
Right.
That one got taken down to Anaheim because Los Angeles, because the Southern California needs another big comics expo.
They don't have enough stuff happening down there.
And it's not like they don't have like the biggest comic expo on the West Coast. Oh, wait, they do.
Yeah.
But
well, it's not like it was kind of difficult for San Francisco, like I think the cost was affecting things or something.
I don't
like
care. Suck it up, San Francisco.
I'm just saying. Man. I think there were factors in
stop being a punk, San Francisco.
I don't know. I don't know all the details.
I'm sure there was very good reasons. I don't hold it against the expo for moving down there. I just miss it. But if
they had to have special like police training for all the drunken cosplayers.
if you miss both of those and you would like to have another big comics convention here in the Bay Area, your prayers have been answered.
What?
I didn't even know I was supposed to be praying. Thank you.
The comic industry legend Stan Lee, and
I think I've heard of him.
Mm-hmm. And the Bay Area legend, somebody, because he's done a lot more than just technology, Steve Wozniak.
Okay, I've heard that name before.
He does really good comics.
Have joined together to create Silicon Valley Comic Con. So that we are going to have another big show here in the Bay Area, and it will be happening in San Jose.
Nice.
So, oh, okay.
Big WoW, Knuckles.
So backyard.
Now,
yeah. Yep. What's going to happen to Big WoW? Is it going to get stepped on? And
I don't. It's a little bit unclear what
Wozniak just bought Big WoW.
What will happen to Big WoW? They may be absorbed into SVCC.
Okay.
But that's as yet to be determined. It sounds like for now they're still their own thing because Fanime is still their own thing.
Yeah.
But
it did sound, and I was poking fun at them a little bit for this, but it did sound like from all of their press materials that they were kind of trying to angle themselves as like the family friendly, like bring all your kiddos and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
Which one?
The
Big WoW. Okay. Big WoW.
Like, so that might be the differentiation between the two from here on out. Because a lot of the cosplaying stuff is getting a little bit on the risque side, so you don't necessarily want like the youngins around all of that. I still think it's cool, but
yeah. Oh, okay. But it's happening next year.
Yes, it is happening next year, and according to this article, it said that Big WoW Comic Festival, which just played this weekend, will become part of the SVCC calendar of events. So, what may be happening is sort of like how there's WonderCon and SDCC, and they're all part of the same convention group. I think Big WoW and SVCC are going to become become the group that does the Bay Area comic book stuff.
That makes it. That's cool.
Yeah.
Because I mean that would suck. It's like, well, Big WoW. I was like, we've been trying so hard, and now
I was looking at the roster this year. They had a good show from what I could tell from the website, and it seems like a lot of people were talking good things about it. So you know,
that'll be cool. Yeah, especially too if it does, like you mentioned with the WonderCon and WonderCon. If it can get attached to that, it'll probably help with marketing and just spreading the word.
Yeah.
It'll probably get a lot more publicity. So that's cool. That'll be good for both.
Yeah.
Should hopefully benefit.
I think everyone's going to win with this, hopefully. Look forward to seeing what next year brings.
They'll just have to start planning, like, okay, what month? Like, okay, nothing's happening this month. Okay, you can do yours there.
Yeah.
Like, so much stuff now.
Yeah.
Yeah, the idea is Silicon Valley Comic Con is an event where fans of all kinds can celebrate the age of the geek. And it seems like we've really hit like a mass market appeal lately with that, with between movies, television, and the cons, it's like it's pretty huge.
So what happened? I know there were stories a while back where San Diego Comic-Con was getting all riled up with people using the name Comic-Con, even though, I mean, it just kind of makes sense that people would use that name. Mm-hmm. So are they, like, over that? Or are they running a risk here that San Diego is going to be like, no, you can't use that name. That's our thing.
That will be an excellent question, and it sounds...
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's hard to say. There have been a number of other groups that have come up more recently that are also called Comic-Con, Emerald City Comic-Con, Vancouver Comic-Con. There's like a number.
Yeah, I think Emerald City was like the big target for San Diego for a while there.
Yeah, because Emerald City has gotten a lot of good press lately. A lot of fan acclaim because it's one of the best run cons around.
The comic creators, it sounds like, are the biggest fans of that, because it sounds like it's actually the kind of the more real setting for them instead of it being just
it seems like a
Hypeville type of thing.
Yeah, it seems like it's got the balance of big enough to pull in big names, but small enough that they're not like, you know, the dealer room isn't like a cattle parade. You know, it's so haven't been yet, so I don't know. But
no,
you should go. It's great. I've heard good things.
Well, speaking of big events, we actually mentioned it earlier. The Star Wars Celebration happened this past weekend and a little bit during the tail end of the week. There were some information dropped about the non-episodic Star Wars films.
Oh, okay. Right.
Specifically Rogue One.
Ooh.
But they also mentioned that the standalone Star Wars movies are now going to be called anthology films.
Uh-huh.
So, all right. That they're going to fall under that banner. Lucasfilm's VP of Development, Kiri Hart, announced the news at Star Wars Celebration. Any standalone films that Lucas is developing outside of the numbered episodic series will be called anthology films. Hart said Star Wars is a place to be explored, and these new movies are a great place to do that. Rogue One, directed by Gareth Edwards, is the first anthology film. They finally dropped some details about Rogue One.
Right. Apparently they showed an actual teaser to the people there.
Yeah, I watched the cam thing. I mean, it is like super, 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 super teaser. I mean,
okay.
I'll talk about it in a second. It's set between episode 3 and episode 4, and it's about a band of resistant fighters uniting for a daring mission to steal the Death Star plans in Star Wars anthology film. So the very first Death Star plan stolen. Now, I remember seeing some people on Twitter. Some were making the wrong kind of joke, talking about how many Bothans were killed to get these plans. That was Return of the Jedi, the second Death Star, not the first one.
Psh, noobs.
That's why my tweet fit more.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I got you now. I got you.
Because I put out there, we'll finally find out why the Rebellion outsourced the stealing of Death Star plans to the Bothans and Return of the Jedi, because I think something bad's going to go down in the first one.
That makes sense.
But to go back to the teaser, they showed, like, I think it looked like an X-Wing or something was flying, and it looked like it was kind of flying through sort of a foresty area.
Okay.
Flying overhead into the sky. It was sort of following it. And then as the camera sort of tilt up towards the sky more, you see, like, the Death Star is like right
there
like on the ground or in the sky?
It's in the sky. You can just see like the silhouette of it.
Oh, okay.
So, and yeah, it's just like huge because it's like right like
on the planet.
the planet atmosphere kind of thing.
Cool.
So you can see it. It's just like menacing. And then it, you know, plays, I think it plays like, might be the Imperial March, I think, or something like that. But
that,
and then you hear
sense.
You hear just a bunch of like, like, you know, something bad's going down, some things,
right.
And then it just, you know, Rogue One,
okay,
thing. So, but this was like a cam footage that I saw from somebody there. So
yeah,
But it was the very definition of teaser, teaser, teaser.
I was all excited because I saw that somebody had finally leaked that, because I'd seen that people were talking about how there was a teaser. And I was surprised that nobody had leaked it up until this point. And so finally, when I saw that somebody had, much to Disney's chagrin, I'd clicked on it just in time for it to have the little note pop up. Like, Disney doesn't like you clicking this. You're killing angels every time you click this.
What? Uh-oh. Sorry, angel.
It didn't, right. And I don't know why they needed to threaten with angels, because even when I clicked it, it didn't go anyplace. But hey, whatever, Disney. Anyway, in news that has nothing to do with Disney, I'm personally a big fan of all of the drone news, because they've done so many interesting things with drones, both military and non-military. But this is actually one of the older drones that they've had running around the planet, and that is the Navy's Salty Dog 502. Now, what's interesting about the 502 right now, even though it is a really old drone, is that it is officially the first drone in history to refuel itself off of an air tanker without somebody else piloting it.
So fully automated refueling in air.
Right. And this is an old drone, too. It's been around for a while.
Wow.
The bad news, even though this is kind of a big win for the Salty Dog 502, now that it's done that, it's going directly to the boneyard.
I'm sure the research will live on in the next version of it, whatever comes next.
Yeah, it's true. Part of what was also interesting about that particular version of the drones that are out there is that it's one of the only drones that was sort of the stealth bomber design, the single wing design of drone.
Okay.
And so the pictures of this thing coming up and siphoning off some gas from a 707 fuel tanker, it looks like an alien spaceship, like coming and topping off off of a Air Force jet or something like that.
That's kind of cool.
So, we appreciate your mark on history, Salty Dog, and we bid you a fond farewell.
Here's to you, Salty Dog, and to all our future robot overlords. You get good send-offs, let's put it that way. Making history, it's pretty good. Speaking of other things making history, this past weekend, Fast and Furious 7 joined the $1 billion club.
Oh. Yeah, and fast too.
This is their third week in the theaters, and they have hit $1.15 billion gross worldwide. Domestically, they've pulled in
like $300.
Yeah, something like that.
I think we've been propping up that movie mm-hmm. here locally.
But yeah, it's doing really, really well. And I think that's kind of cool, because one, it's a big, dumb, silly movie. And the fact that it's there's a lot of people that really enjoy it, that are like into like just kind of this. To me, it's sort of a pure enjoyment film, where it's like you're not going because it has the most intense plot. You're not going for award-winning acting. You're there because
I'm there for the drama. I don't know what you're talking about.
It's got the drama.
Yeah,
it does.
Mm-hmm.
In spizades.
But
that's how it's said, right?
Something like
probably.
That.
Yeah.
But it's just a lot. It's just great to see, and also the movie do well, but also the one of the things that's unique about it is that the cast is fairly is one of the more diverse casts and that are leading characters, all of them.
True.
So that's
true.
I also thought it was fascinating.
They're from a lot of different backgrounds.
Mm-hmm. I also like the kind of just looking at the sort of trailers that went before it, like the kinds of like the breadth of the audience that that would come to see Furious 7. Like, it's it started with a Age of Ultron trailer, and then it was came up with it, but like it goes from there. And the last trailer before the film was a new biopic about the NWA,
right?
Straight out of Compton.
Straight out of Compton. Yeah. And I'm like, wow. It's like the idea that like one film can like span that like. Granted, the Avengers is like another like pan audience appreciation thing, but like that you have
Avengers is straight out of Compton.
That spread of audiences that would all be drawn to a movie like this, where they would be excited about these trailers, I think is also incredibly cool. And the fact that it's successful means there'll probably be more people looking to do these, to open up their casting to potentially other types of leading actors and stuff like that, which I think is also very cool. Also on the Star Wars front too, which is doing a bit of that itself. So,
yeah,
$1 billion club for Furious 7. That's well done. Well done, gentlemen. Well done.
Yeah, it's amazing to me that hasn't spawned way more like knockoff movies than it has. Like, I know it's had its share of like more faster type movies.
Yeah.
But yeah, you would have thought at this point with them having 7 of them that they'd be making a new like car movie every couple months or something like that.
Yeah, I think like the next most successful one that I can think of that isn't the Fast and Furious franchise is the Need for Speed film, and that one only did okay at the box office.
Yeah, and it had, from what a lot of people considered a fairly bankable star after his success from a really popular TV show. So, and it did not do well. So, yeah.
It didn't do terrible. It didn't do great either.
It did horrible. It defied all expectations of good. I don't really know whether it did or not.
Well, here's a way that you can do some good. If you're an animal lover who wants to help homeless animals find forever homes, but have limited time to volunteer, you can join San Jose Animal Advocates, a local nonprofit that is building a community network to help find loving foster and forever homes for our pets and our local shelters. With your help, we can save countless animals. All it takes is a few clicks, and you can share their stories with your network of friends. It's easy. Join them at sjanimalvocates.org or look for them on Facebook. Now, my next story spins off from Furious 7.
Nice.
There's reports that Furious 7's James Wan might be the frontrunner to direct the Aquaman movie.
That'll be interesting.
According to The Hollywood Reporter, filmmaker James Wan is the frontrunner to direct Aquaman for Warner Brothers. Wan is coming off the record-breaking opening of Furious 7 and now record-breaking billion
club. It's like the seventh most highest-grossing film of all time right now.
How many platinums is that?
Well, it's a lot.
He's also the director behind the original Saw and the first two Insidious movies.
I forgot about that.
Wan has no offer at this stage, but he is the studio's choice, and some preliminary talks have taken place, reports The Hollywood Reporter. While some believe that Wan will not return for the 8th installment of the Fast and Furious franchise, Universal does hold his option and could exercise it. So
he's probably starting to wonder, like, am I being typecast as like the director of Big Samoan Guys?
Yeah. It looks like there's a release date for Aquaman 2018. So if he does do the sequel to, or, you know, if he does whatever the Fast and the Furious 8 is going to be called, it might prevent him from doing Aquaman. So I guess quickly, what would you rather James Wan do if you could go, James Wan, do this, do Aquaman or do the Fast and Furious 8?
I'd actually be really interested to see him do an Aquaman movie, just because I'd completely forgotten that he did Insidious, because they didn't really even play it up that he was the director of that one, it didn't seem like.
No.
And he did, in my view, a really solid job on both of those movies.
I'd be curious to see him take on Aquaman. I thoroughly enjoyed his latest outing in franchise, and I would like to see, and I think I'd be interested to see him like spin out into just branch his genres even further.
Try out another Samoan.
Yeah.
All right. There's not a whole lot of time left in the show, so no point really doing a music break, so do another story.
Yeah.
Okay. We have some bad news for FM radio, and I know it's kind of been coming, but somebody has made it official that they are canning FM radio, and that somebody is the country of Norway.
Wait, what?
Norway has made official plans to dismantle FM radio in their country in 2017.
Whoa. The look on my face is highly confused.
Yeah, that's more confused than I've seen you in a long time, actually. That
taking
is
apart
sincere confusion.
Taking apart FM radio? I
think the entire idea behind it is that, like a lot of countries in that part of the world, a lot of the airwaves are actually controlled by the government themselves. Mm-hmm. And so with them, it's more of a hands-on thing because it allows them to take that and put resources directly into new digital instead. And since they already have a larger audience of people that is functioning on the digital side of things instead of FM radio, it allows them to kind of put their money where it's a little bit smarter for them. So it works out pretty well for them. But it's still, like, kind of a big step. It's hard for me to imagine a country where you can turn on FM radio and there's, like, literally nothing there. It just sounds weird.
I wonder if they'll open up any of that spectrum to, like, internet networking.
That might be part of it, too. If it's all government-owned, it allows them to sell off all of that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's probably a good way to cash in from a couple of different directions.
Yeah, plus, like, if they could find a way to send decent speed data over that, that would cover a lot of ground really fast.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, sort of as a comparison to America and why it probably won't happen as soon. In America, 90% of Americans still listen to AM/FM radio at least weekly, so it's probably not going to shut down really quickly. But that was a study back in 2012, and things are evolving pretty quickly. And already back then, a pretty serious chunk of people were already moving to internet-only services. So that's just the last time that they did a comprehensive study.
Mm-hmm.
But in Norway, 56% of Norwegians are already listening to digital radio instead of the FM all. It's FM contemporary.
Well, there you are then. Wow.
Oh, and get this. This was probably my favorite part of the entire thing, just because it's like so like stereotypical Norway. The head of the Norwegian Broadcasting Corporation, his name is Thor Gjermund Eriksson. So,
wow. I don't think you could get more.
It's fairly a Norwegian name.
Wow. Yeah.
If you had to have an American think up a Norwegian name, that would be it, pretty much. Except for the middle name might change.
Mm-hmm.
But it would be a Thor Eriksson.
Yeah, you'd be hard pressed to get much more Norwegian than that. Wow. Huh.
So yeah. Norway taking the leap, breaking boundaries, adventuring into new territories, like it's always done since Viking days.
Arguable, yeah. They were one of the early long distance seafarers, weren't they?
Yeah, maybe. I haven't really heard much about that from relatives who happen to be Norwegians
or anything like that.
Yeah.
Very cool. Anybody else got a quick one, or
do you have a quick one or no?
Yeah, sort of. I'd call this sort of a news of the weird.
Okay.
A new breed of frog has been discovered, and down in Costa Rica. And the species of frog was known as the glass frog, or the... I'm not going to try and pronounce its Latin name. But what makes this frog a little bit unique is that you can see through its stomach.
What?
You can see through the skin on its tummy to its insides. And they have the picture of it, and it's a little... It's a little weird, but it's also really kind of cool. To me, it just shows that nature has a sense of humor. Apparently, there's 149 different species of glass frogs in Central and South America. And this new discovery brings the number to 14 that are found distinctly in Costa Rica. So there you go.
Okay. I thought you were going to do the story that I wanted to do. But that actually makes it make a little bit more sense, because this kind of hints towards there might be 15 versions, because they just found Kermit the Frog in Costa Rica.
Ooh, yeah, I saw that picture.
Frog here from Costa Rica.
It's a unique flavor of the glass frog that, you know, the stereotypical Kermit eyes, like the white... with the little black, like, weird shape.
Uh-huh.
Yes. It is exactly like Kermit. See, I wouldn't have gone directly for... Apparently, it's the same one that he was just talking about. I would have went directly for that instead of the see-through stomach, personally.
See, two different audiences coming from get to the same thing, different places.
There you go.
Right. The side-by-side comparison photos are, like, pretty spot on. I've absolutely loved the internet for that.
Yeah, that's actually pretty impressive. We should post a link to your story as well about that, because that is pretty impressive.
Speaking of that,
mm-hmm.
that's going to do it for tonight's Robots Attack. But Caleb,
mm-hmm.
how can the audience be a part of the show even though it's over? The internet is open 24/7.
It is. And while our time here is drawing to an end, you can still participate by going to facebook.com/robotsattackshow or to twitter.com/robotsattackme. Both of those are active all the time. You can also hit us up on email, robotsattackshow@gmail.com. But if you just want one place to find all things Robots Attack, just focus all your energy in one place. Remember this, robotsattack.me. That is where we post archive episodes of our show and where you will also find the links to our stories as well as the aforementioned Twitter and Facebook. But that is like the canonical archive of these things. So there you go, robotsattack.me.
All right, that's going to do it for us. Stick around for some awesome music here on KSU Santa Clara, 103.3 FM, The Underground Sound. We'll be back next Monday from 7 to 9. Take it easy, everybody.